Washington, Tuesday, January 13th, 2009. Hello again from the nation's capital. I'm Greg Corumbus. In this edition, will George W. Bush be remembered as a near-great president? That's the prediction of Fred Barnes of the Weekly Standard and the Fox News Channel. His latest column for the Weekly Standard gives 10 reasons why people should be grateful for the presidency of George W. Bush, ranging from his rejection of the Kyoto Protocol on global warming to his Supreme Court choices to his decision to go ahead with the surge in Iraq when virtually no one else believed in it. Also in this edition, the future of American foreign policy. As Hillary Clinton breezes through the Senate Foreign Relations Committee confirmation hearing on Tuesday, we'll ask Cliff May of the Foundation for the Defense of Democracies what the U.S. priority should be on the international stage. Plus, the connection between failing to crack down on illegal immigration and our current economic crisis. We'll talk about that with Bob Dane of the Federation for American Immigration Reform. And slightly more optimistic, but still overall pessimistic. We'll look at the latest consumer sentiment numbers, courtesy of Investors Business Daily. All that, plus a look at Tuesday's top headlines, is still ahead in this edition. We begin with our discussion with Fred Barnes, and we begin right now. My first guest in this edition is Fred Barnes, executive editor of the Weekly Standard, regular panelist on Special Report on the Fox News Channel, of course, co-host of the Beltway Boys on the same network. He's also the author of a biography of President Bush entitled Rebel in Chief, which was released near the start of the president's second term. For the latest edition of the Weekly Standard, Fred has taken a look at what he considers the 10 most important accomplishments of the Bush administration for which conservatives and most Americans should be grateful. And Fred, it's always good to have you with us.
Well, I'm glad to be here.
You cover a variety of different areas of the president's policy preferences over the past 8 years. In fact, you lead off with one that a lot of people probably forgot about because it happened right in the beginning, and that's his scrapping of the Kyoto Protocol, the environmental treaty that major industrialized nations wanted us to sign on to, although it exempted China and India. And you point out that the time that's been given to study the issue because the president rejected it has been very influential. Explain that.
Oh, absolutely. I think we have gotten away from just claims of global warming and computer printouts, and we've had a time since then, and it was in 2001, of course, when the president announced that the U.S. would not be a part of the Kyoto Treaty, to look at the facts. And we know now we're in a cooling period that had not been predicted by any of these global warming computer models, and more scientists have come out of the woods and so on, and I don't mean scientists from Podunk State U. I mean, scientists, meteorologists from MIT and Harvard and many other places, and they doubt, one, whether global warming is, to the extent it has warmed over the last century, whether it's any kind of a threat to the environment or to people, and two, whether it's man-made or not. And I think those issues are very up in the air. And one thing that certainly happened was this idea that there's a consensus of scientists that say global warming is a building catastrophe and so on, and yeah, that's fallen apart. And my point is that if President Bush hadn't taken this step, for which you'll remember he was heavily lambasted all over the world, and particularly by liberals in the U.S. and environmentalists, if he hadn't taken that step and said, well, let's stop, I don't think we'd be where we are today, where a rational approach now is possible.
And, of course, the issue that will be probably closest associated with George W. Bush is the war in Iraq. And that war, of course, covers a couple of the points that you make here. Number one, and actually it's the last one on your list, but perhaps the most significant, and that's the surge, which essentially was an idea pushed by him and David Petraeus. And it seems like everybody else, not only around the world, but in his own administration, was very skeptical about this. Mm-hmm. Yet it turned out to be one of his biggest victories on a policy front.
Yeah, I only put it at number 10 because I started out with Kyoto and then went to enhanced interrogation of terrorists and then to building up the power of the presidency because I thought those were probably the most provocative achievements. And I put the surge last because it's the most obvious, but it is the most important. Here was a war that was being lost, and now it's won. A war where we threw out a horrible dictator and produced, in the first couple of years, chaos, with the possibility of a bloody civil war happening between different Islamic factions and so on, and the surge and the new counterinsurgency strategy, which you described accurately, is one where only the president and the vice president and a handful of aides, and of course all of us at the Weekly Standard, were in favor of it, but nobody else was. And it was a real profile encouraged by the president, and it worked.
And you mentioned a couple of the other points on your list there, the more provocative ones, as you term them, that the liberals probably may not agree with so much.
Yeah.
The expansion of presidential power, as mm-hmm. well as enhanced interrogation. Some say those have been flirting or perhaps gone over the line of what's constitutionally permissible. Why do you believe those are important positive steps that the
certainly the president has wartime powers that allow him to do what he needs to do to win the war. And a part of that would be to getting the high-level terrorists, particularly the mastermind of the 9/11 attacks, Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, and finding out what they knew. And if it took waterboarding, which is debatable whether it's torture or not, it's an issue, it's a matter that's still debated. It was necessary for that to happen, and we learned a lot. And we haven't had a second attack. I mean, I think he has spared thousands and thousands of American lives. Because tough interrogation tactics were used, and they've always been used in wartime, and you know, they were used in the Civil War. You know, compared to the powers that Lincoln took during the Civil War, what the president's done has been pretty small. And you read all these liberal historians now, and I've read a bunch of them recently. You know, they said, well, Lincoln did just the right thing, but that terrible George W. Bush, they're really biased on this subject. He did the right thing. He built up presidential power, which had really been degraded, Greg, over the period of Vietnam and Watergate and the weak presidency of Bill Clinton, and egged on in part by Vice President Cheney. The president, you know, took steps that made the presidency stronger, and now the beneficiary of that is going to be Barack Obama, who complained about it.
The other thing, the president promoted heavily from his second inaugural and even before that, was the expansion of freedom around the world. Freedom breeds free people, obviously, and that means less terrorism, less war, because free nations can dialogue and come to a peaceable conclusion much of the time. In addition to the rhetoric, do you believe that that's a notion that's caught on around the world, and how effective has he been in promoting that message?
Well, I think he's been pretty effective. You know, Ronald Reagan promoted it, then it sort of slipped a little under the first President Bush and Bill Clinton, but Bush has really put it back on the agenda. It's something that Barack Obama would be crazy to back away from. Now, it's not something that you're inflexible about. I mean, you don't demand that, say, in Egypt, that we're not going to give them any aid if they don't have an election tomorrow, which is supervised by Jimmy Carter. But you do need to promote it heavily at the rhetorical level and also at the practical level at all as well as you can. And look what's happened in Iraq. You know, elections aren't everything. And I keep hearing this from liberals. Oh, an election, they have those in dictatorships. They aren't everything, but they are something. And you have to have, you cannot have a democracy without elections. You could have a dictatorship with phony elections, but real elections, and they've had those in Iraq, have been ones that are crucial, and we see what's happened. Iraq is not, I would call it a fragile democracy, but it is a democracy.
Fred, you also talk about a couple of domestic issues that you see as positives for the president that perhaps some conservatives might not agree with you on. Number one, No Child Left Behind, which has improved accountability as mm-hmm. well as test scores around the country, but conservatives might say that it's too much federal intervention in that arena. The other is the prescription drug benefit mm-hmm. from Medicare, which you point out could have been worse if the Democrats got their way. A Republican or conservatives might see that as again, the expansion of government to a disturbing end. What do you say in defense of those two policy proposals and why they're important that they
well, I,
were
I
done Bush's way?
A No Child Left Behind a lot more than the prescription drug benefit, which I do have some doubts about, and my only defense of it is more of a practical one, and you stated it, Greg, and that is that if Republicans didn't enact one that has some free market forces in other words, you have drug companies competing, and so the drug prices for seniors are lower, but it could have been worse, and probably would have been worse if Democrats had passed one, but that's about the best defense I can give of it. On No Child Left Behind, though, I mean, the results have been good. We do need testing, and that's the one thing that provides accountability for school systems. And look at the enemies of No Child Left Behind. Now, true, there's some critics of some conservative critics who are in favor of unfettered local control, and I understand that, and they can make a case for that, but school boards and the teachers' unions and the education schools and the liberals, they're all the ones who are attacking this because they don't like accountability. And then they say, the teachers just have to teach to the test. For heaven's sakes, it's on math and English. they ought to teach to the test.
One of the other areas that you believe is perhaps going to be the source of one of the strongest Bush legacies are his two appointments to the Supreme Court shortly after the start of his second term. John Roberts, the Chief Justice, replacing William Rehnquist, and then Sam Alito, eventually, after his first choice of Harriet Myers was withdrawn, replacing Sandra Day O'Connor. What do you see as their impact thus far on the court, and what do you think it might be down the line, assuming they stay on the bench for a while?
Well, Greg, I remember painfully how Richard Nixon and Ronald Reagan and the first President Bush all failed when their goal was, and it was publicly stated, to have a conservative Supreme Court, and they would get justices on the court that would produce that. Nixon failed, Reagan failed, Bush the elder failed, George W. Bush did not. The two he put on the court, Roberts and Alito, have turned the court in favor of a 5-4 majority, mostly, not on every case for sure. But so I think Bush's Supreme Court legacy is one that we're already seeing in practice. It's a different court. It's basically a conservative court. Lots of times you don't always get 5 votes on every issue, but you do want a lot more than we have had. It's a much more conservative court than we've had probably since the 1930s, before the court was changed by Franklin Roosevelt. That's a long time.
About 30 seconds left with Fred Barnes of the Weekly Standard and the Fox News Channel. And Fred, you point out at the end of your piece that it's going to take a little while for history to fully judge the merits of this presidency. But from where we stand right now, from the perspective of 8 years of hindsight, what kind of grade do you give George W. Bush across the board?
No, I'd say right now he's going to come down eventually as a near great president. People will see the infrastructure he's put in to fight the war on terror in Iraq and other things. And he'll come out very well, very well. History will be very kind to him.
Fred, unfortunately, that'll have to be the last word. Thanks so much for your time today. We really appreciate it.
Greg, I enjoyed it. Bye-bye.
Fred Barnes, executive editor of the Weekly Standard, co-host of the Beltway Boys on the Fox News Channel, where he also appears as a panelist on Special Report with Brett Baer. This is Dateline Washington.